Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
This hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by the Pro Club. Guys, I have a fun game plan. This is how it's going to work. I am going to give you two options. Okay, you can buy into one of the two options. They can be equally likely or equally unlikely. You have to tell me why you're buying in to one over the other. And there's going to be some tough choices in here. You can't choose both. Okay, you have to tell me why you're buying into one over the other. You buying this? All right, here we go. It just felt very anticlimactic. I was hoping.
You want a sound effect?
Maybe. There we go. Okay. Tell me if you guys are buying this. Ready? The first one. Schneider trades down from 56 overall. 56 is the first Seahawks pick on the board, one of just three that they have. It's their second rounder. Or Schneider uses a current player to acquire more picks. You can't choose both.
Okay.
You have to choose one.
So I have to pick which one I'm
buying. You got to buy stock in one of these. Schneider trades down from the second rounder, or he uses a current player to acquire more picks.
I think this one's pretty easy. I'm going to go with number one. I'm going to go with John Schneider trades down from 56 overall. At this point, I don't see any players that he would realistically want to move on from at this point because I don't see a plan to replace those players. And really, the one that stands out to me is Tyler Lockett, Bobby Wagner, maybe even a Jamal Adams. Those are the three names that have been, you know, floated out there. Jaron Reed was one before they eventually ended up having to let him go as cap hits, the guys that they could eventually move on from. I don't think that they move from any of those players, but rather trade down from the 56 overall pick to get some more.
If they do trade down from 56, they're probably going to look to stay in that second round. So that would leave them with only about eight teams to deal with because I think the 64th pick is the final pick of that second round. So it kind of limits the Seahawks in a way. And we know John Schneider loves to burn up that phone. And I think dealing a player would allow him to negotiate with more teams than just the handful that are picking behind the Seahawks in the second round. So I'm going to go with pick number two of John Schneider using a current player to acquire more picks. There is a precedent for this. We saw it a couple of years ago, trading Frank Clark for a first rounder and some more picks from Kansas City. I think it happens. Do I know which player? No, I have no idea. My guess would be Tyler Lockett. Of all the guys that are of that veteran ilk that could get you something back in a trade, I think that's what I'm buying here.
Okay. The text line is also split.
Interesting.
Here we go. On to our next one. I like my little bell, my little stock market bell. Here we go. Are you buying this? Here is your first option. The Seahawks draft an offensive lineman with their first pick, or the Seahawks draft a cornerback with their first pick. Both are needs for this team. Which one do they do?
Okay. So right now, as it currently stands, this is a pretty deep class for both. And when I say both, this is a group that in the cornerback room in the draft, there are a lot of guys that fit the profile that the Seahawks really, really like in terms of height, being over 6 feet, having over 32-inch armed wingspans, being long, lanky corners. There's a plethora of them throughout the draft that I think that they will be able to get to. Offensive line, it's a very deep class as well. And it really comes down to the question of where do you think you're more solidified at? Do you think you're more solidified at offensive line right now that you signed Ethan Posick and you feel like, hey, we don't need to address the center position at this point in time. We don't need to add competition there. Therefore, we can look at other positions with that first pick that we eventually take in the draft. I think cornerback actually is the one that really stands out to me unless there is a obvious choice at that center position in the draft that just happens to fall right down into their lap. But I am going to buy stock in the Seahawks drafting either a receiver or a corner in this draft.
Receiver was not an option.
Hey, but
Jake
corner.
Jake buying stock in the Seahawks drafting a corner. He hedges his bet. You should always build that portfolio. It makes sense with saying, you know what, I'm going to also take them taking a wide receiver or a corner over that. Curtis, your choices, you can buy stock in one of these two. Seahawks draft an OL first, or they draft a cornerback first.
I think based off the comments today from Quentin Dunbar that were on his Instagram account saying that conversations with the Seahawks are going well and that there is interest in both sides, I think that lessens the need for a cornerback because you got Akilah Witherspoon already in here. DJ Reed is going to be a factor this season. I think if you bring Quentin Dunbar back, that's not a terrible secondary to run out there, which I think lessens the need for a cornerback with that first pick of theirs at number 56 or wherever it happens. But offensive line, I mean, Duane Brown, you never know when he's going to say this is it for his career. There's other obvious needs on the offensive line, center position. Ethan Posick is back, but who knows how much he'll, you know, factor into this year's plans. I think they go offensive lineman first. Stacey, what do you think here?
I'm going to go with offensive linemen. I know they need a cornerback. I'm not as familiar with the cornerback depth in the draft. I remember we talked with Rob Staton, and he said that there were some pretty good O-linemen, and he felt like what they were paying Ethan Posick was really more of kind of like a hanging on to him for insurance, but didn't feel like a long-term investment.
Right.
It didn't feel like they were burying a lot of money into that.
In so his words, he called it a draft hedge.
So it indicated to him that they would be looking at an interior lineman in the draft. And so, I mean, it could be any lineman. But so I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to buy stock in the first one that the Seahawks draft Noel first. Here is my next one. Oh, we're looking all the way around the league now. And by that, I mean just down in San Francisco. Here are your two options. Tell me what you're buying stock in. Option one, the 49ers draft Trey Lance. Option two, the 49ers draft Mac Jones.
The Mac Jones phenomena is incredible.
Jones.
Yes, McCorkle Jones. I apologize.
His parent given name.
It's Michael McCorkle.
Yeah, so
McCorkle.
We will not refer to him as Mac Jones. We will only refer to him as Michael McCorkle Jones on this show.
On this program from now on.
Michael McCorkle Jones is a guy that has gotten a lot of, you know, there's been a lot of steam on that train in terms of McCorkle Jones going to the 49ers. I would be shocked that you draft him at the third spot. You've given up all this capital when he has a very legit chance of just being there at number 12 to begin with, or even just having to trade up just a little bit on draft day to maybe 9, 10, or 8. Three? And you're going to take him? I'm not seeing it. I'm not buying that. I am going to be buying stock in Trey Lance. I think that he is a prospect that is worth, and makes a lot of sense that he is worth that type of capital, that type of talent. And Stacey, when we talk about Jimmy Garoppolo and they're selling the idea that Jimmy Garoppolo might be on this roster, who would you do that for? You would do it for a player like Trey Lance because of the lack of playing time that he had this last year, and also you view him as more of a developmental project, much like the Chiefs did with Patrick Mahomes, wanting to give him a year within the system. If he surprises you, great. If not, you're not worried about it. But with Mac Jones, you're trading up for that guy at three because you believe that he is going to be your starter. Not that he'll be it a year from now, but that he is your starter from day one. I don't see it happening. It's got to be Trey Lance. That's who I'm buying stock
in. I'm also buying stock in Trey Lance, although Lynch and Shanahan were at Michael McCorkle Jones's pro day, Curtis. So which one are you buying stock in? Number one, 49ers draft Trey Lance. Or two, 49ers draft Mac Jones.
Yes, hear that off in the distance.
What is that, Curtis?
Oh, that's Return of the Mac.
There you go.
That's right. Michael McCorkle Jones, a.k.a.
No
Mac Jones,
way.
Is going to the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah.
You heard it here on the Jake and Stacey Show.
Woo!
First at 12:08 p.m.
I just want to hear that so we can just keep playing this here.
It's going to be Mac Jones. Why on earth would John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan prioritize his pro day over Justin Fields without something going
because
in the back of their mind?
Reportedly, Shanahan said that they were going to get another shot at seeing Justin Fields' pro day, or not pro day, but another chance to see him throw live in a private workout or of some sort. So therefore, they were able to, you know, work it out this way. So with all that being said, I think all of that is just a bunch of smokescreen for the idea that they want to draft Trey Lance at number two.
But see, Jake, with that being said, let's say you're going out and seeing a movie opening night. You were so excited for that movie. Compared to going to see a movie that, you know, has been out for a couple weeks, you're not as excited to go see that. You're more excited to see Mac Jones day number one than you are Justin Fields a week from now.
Okay. All right.
That's how the 49ers are approaching this.
That's fair. That's fair. I would say very fair. Now, it's a great point here by the texter on the text line. The 360 says, there's probably a good chance that Stacey doesn't even know what that tune is.
Okay, that's ridiculous. You guys can't make fun of me for being too old and too young.
It's not swing music from the roaring 40s.
Stop. Next one. Ring my bell over here. My little stock market bell. There you go. Okay, next one. I like this one. You have to choose to invest in one of these choices. Number one, Roger Goodell protects himself from booze by bringing out a beloved Hall of Famer. Or number two, Roger Goodell protects himself from booze by bringing out children.
Number two. Absolutely. A Hall of Famer, you're not going to get
Cleveland.
Yeah. You're not going to get by bringing a Hall of Famer out. Okay? This is Cleveland. They're ruthless. And it doesn't matter because it's a lose-lose anyways. I guarantee you there's going to be a fan out there of a different team that was a rival that Hall of Famer is going to bother them. So you can't hide behind a beloved Hall of Famer.
But you can
hide
behind
children.
Yes. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
I do it all the time.
Absolutely you can.
Yep.
So if I'm Roger Goodell. No, you wouldn't.
Yeah, would.
You would not.
No, Curtis, you would not boo a child.
If Roger Goodell was standing next to them, I'd still boo.
Curtis, stop.
Absolutely.
That child is going to think you're booing him.
No.
Oh, maybe they should get a tougher skin. I mean,
child.
Yeah, well.
Well, also, you got to learn very quickly about consequences.
Yeah, maybe
of who you
shouldn't
hang out
be standing next to Roger Goodell.
Yeah, who you decide to hang out with. Sometimes you get associated with the company you keep. Stacey.
Are you buying stock in him hiding behind children?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Okay.
The only Hall of Famer that is even like a possibility in Cleveland would be Jim Brown. Because there really isn't anybody else in that franchise's history.
What if he tries to bring out someone that's a universally beloved guy? It's like not even in the NFL.
Like
Mariano
Rivera. Henry Winkler or something?
Yeah. Hide behind. He brings out Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
Wow, there are a lot of people with Curtis on this one about doesn't matter who they bring out. Could be a child. They will still boo Roger Goodell.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Let me get to my next one here. Little stock market bell.
Oh, yeah.
Not done with it yet. Okay. Now, both of these things happened in Cactus League play. You guys are going to buy stock in one of them happening before the other. So this doesn't mean that one doesn't happen. It means that you're going to buy stock, this is in the Mariners, with either James Paxton strikes out eight or more in a game or Evan White hits a grand slam in the actual regular season. You have to buy stock in one of these happening before the other, or just happening.
I'm going to take James Paxton. I'm going to take James Paxton, strikes out eight or more, and I think he does it in his first start.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, I'm taking James Paxton, striking eight or more. That's going to happen at some point within this season. That's just the kind of pitcher that he is. Evan White, I will gladly take it if he hits a grand slam. That's somebody that when he makes contact, it goes a long, long way. The biggest issue for him is making consistent contact. Whereas James Paxton, we know the peak of what he can be. And that is a guy who goes out and gets eight strikeouts more often than not. And I think Paxton, with the spring that he had, the 17 Ks in eight innings pitched, I think that points to somebody that could very easily do this at some point in the regular season. I'm taking James Paxton.
For funsies, I'm going to take Evan White hitting a grand slam. Even though James Paxton has looked phenomenal and I am expecting great things from him this season, a really nice bounce back year, I think I'm going to go ahead and say Evan White hitting a grand slam is within the realm of possibility. I'm mostly saying this to disagree with you guys. Like, let's be real. That's what I'm doing right here.
Well, yeah.
Now, I do want to come back at this because one of these, situations that we are buying stock in, the market could be changing here very rapidly and in a bad direction for Curtis Rogers here. Ian Rappaport put out just a minute ago that free agent cornerback Quentin Dunbar, most recently of the Seattle Seahawks, has two scheduled visits for next week. And where are they two? The Detroit Lions and the Arizona Cardinals.
Okay. Arizona, wow. Why are you always doing this?
He says he's waiting for the right opportunity, but it all ramps up very soon. So, Curtis, you're buying stock that they're not taking a corner. What if they lose out on Dunbar here?
Well, I mean, I didn't know this information back then, but you know what?
Maybe
you
I had some
back down. You already bought
my
stock
bets.
In it.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what?
Yes.
I'm sticking with this. They're taking an O lineman over a DB.
Okay,
all right.
Still gonna happen.
Doesn't mean that Quentin Dunbar isn't gonna end up back in Seattle. It just means that hey, the market is gonna get competitive here, and if you got somebody you know like Dunbar going out on visits, doesn't mean that they could eventually go on one of those visits and not come out of it.
I fully expected him to remain in Seattle. I'm a little bit surprised. In fact, I'm a little bit surprised they haven't re-signed him already. But
I'm honestly not surprised that Dunbar is getting a little bit of a market here because of the talent and the idea of, look, this guy went through a ringer of an offseason last year. And if he can get himself back on the right track, off the field, on the field, get his body and his mind right, he is one of those guys that can be one of the unique corners in this league. That's why we were excited about him last year. And then we found out all the legality issues that he was dealing with. And you never got to see that happen. So I think that if you're a team out there looking at it and just trying to get a quote-unquote steal in free agency, Dunbar could potentially be one of those guys. But I would not expect the Seahawks to not be a part of the conversation when it's all said and done. I think you'll still hear the Seahawks, you know, be in on Dunbar.
All right, that is you buying this right now. It's 12:15. That means it's Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass,
with Jake and Stacy.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
Well, Jake, getting back to Quentin Dunbar, he did say on Instagram this morning that the Seahawks have been in contact with him and talks have been positive. So what do you make of that sort of parallel to the news we just heard from Ian Rapoport saying he's going to visit the Cardinals and Lions?
I believe that Dunbar views the Seahawks as one of those perfect fits that he told Ian Rapoport. Look, I'm going to hold out for the right situation. I believe that Seattle is one of those right situations. That's what I believe Dunbar is saying to himself. However, I'm going to test the market and see what is out there for me. I'm going to hear some of the recruiting pitches. I'm going to go through this process. But I'm ultimately going to also, at the end, when it's all said and done, give the Seahawks and John Schneider a chance to still be in the conversation. Why? Why would I do that? Why would there be a sense of loyalty? Because the Seattle Seahawks were loyal to Dunbar through all of the issues that he went through. It would have been very easy for the Seahawks to say, nope, we're going to wipe our hands clean of this situation. We're going to cut and release this player based off of the information that we're hearing. But they stuck through with it with Dunbar. They helped him out tremendously, trying to give him all the help that he needed and monitoring the situation. And eventually were able to have him in Seattle. It did not work on the field the way that they wanted to, but I believe that there's a strong relationship there between player and organization, and I believe that Dunbar will give the team a chance, one final chance when it's all said and done, to match or better an offer that's out on the table, and we'll see if the Seahawks are willing to do that.
Second down. Stacy.
Curtis.
Could.
Uh-huh.
The.
Yep.
Seahawks.
Yeah.
Afford to re-sign KJ Wright right now?
No. So they would need to make some kind of move. It's not that they can't afford to do it. The Seahawks can make room to, as long as it's not like a really pricey free agent, add someone. Absolutely. The problem is, right now, this number is from over the cap. They're $1.7 million over the cap. It's okay to be over the cap right now. You just got to eventually make some room. And if you want to add someone, you got to find a way to do it by obviously freeing up money elsewhere. So that means either releasing someone or restructuring one of their top contracts. So looking at this list, the top paid guys like Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, Tyler Lockett, Dwayne Brown, Jamal Adams, right now Gabe Jackson, Quandre Diggs also on here. So are one of those guys an option for potentially restructuring? They're going to have to extend Jamal Adams. Maybe they try something unique. Normally, he would take up a much bigger portion of the cap in a normal year. Maybe they do something like offering him a bigger signing bonus and moving that into later years to lower the cap hit from about $9.8 million. Whatever they do, they got to free up something, because right now, today, they'd need to make a move to sign KJ Wright.
Great text from the 425 about Quentin Dunbar.
Says,
I'd rather mix a salad in a bowl too small than re-sign Dunbar.
Oh, that's a nightmare.
That's frustrating. You got leaves going everywhere, dressing spilling over the side.
It is the worst, especially when you underestimate the amount of salad and you pick that bowl. You're like, man, I thought this bowl was the perfect size for the amount of salad in this situation. I horribly misjudged this.
And the worst part is when you have limited quantities of the good stuff. Like, you got, like 7 croutons, and one of them falls over the edge on the floor, and you're like, great, this is my fault. I did this.
Dude, shout out croutons. Third down.
Yeah. Great text.
Jake, which UW draft prospects are you anxious to hear about how their pro day went?
Well, the news is in. The news is in. Jim Nagy, actually, out there, our friend of the show, tweeted out there the results of a couple of higher profile prospects for UW, and I think that there's some guys that really earned some money. I mean, you look at Levi Onsuerike at 6'2", 290 pounds. He ran a 4.85 and bench pressed 29 times at 225. That's a very good pro day for Levi Onsuerike. I think he earned some money through his pro day. And how about Joe Tyron? We forget about him. He measured in at 6'5", 259 pounds, with a wingspan of 82¾-inch long wingspan. That is absurd.
It's a pterodactyl.
That's what you call a creature. He's just a creature out on the edge. And he ran a 4.6 4.40. He's going to be someone that is taken off the board, I would anticipate, in maybe early second round. At the mid second round at the latest, he earned some money for sure. And then two guys out on the edge that Elijah Molden, highly regarded corner, nickel corner for the Huskies, two-time All Pac 12. He measured in at 5'9", 192 pounds, arm wingspan 29½, which if you know with the Seahawks, they like 32 guys with over 32 inch arms. Now his 40 was a 4.6. 4.62. That hurts you a little bit. Now, when you watch the film of Elijah Molden, you don't see 4.6. You see a very instinctive, fast player on the field. So Elijah Molden didn't necessarily earn himself or do himself any favors with that 40 time, but I still think that there's going to be somebody out there that falls in love with Elijah Molden and the player he is and how they can fit into his defense. He is just a straight-up ball player. And then lastly, Keith Taylor, I think, earned some money. 6'2", 187 pounds, 4.5 is what he ran, and has an incredible wingspan as well. So when I talk about a lot of guys that are that size and length that the Seahawks like, DB Keith Taylor fits that mold very, very well for the Seahawks. So top prospects for UW had a pretty good overall day on their pro day today.
Fourth down. Jake, what kind of vibe are you getting from the 49ers and Rams after seeing the big swings they've taken this offseason?
It reeks desperation. Just going to be honest. What the Rams did for the trade for Jared, ship out Jared Goff and to bring in Matt Stafford, I think they upgraded as a team in that regard, but it was a very, very desperate move that they made for a guy that has a strong injury history. Then you look at the 49ers and how much capital that they're giving up over the next few years to trade up in this draft to find their next guy. I just think it's two very, very desperate moves to find a quarterback and solidify that position. And if you're here in Seattle, with all the drama and everything that unfolded, you have to feel very, very good about the fact that you have Russell Wilson, who has been a mainstay for this franchise for 9 seasons and hopefully a whole lot more down the line. But when you see these types of moves that are made in the offseason from the Rams and the 49ers, they're flashy moves, and they're ones that get people excited. But you also have to, I also look at it as a desperate, desperate move to get something that the Seahawks have been fortunate to have for quite some time.
Coming up later this hour, ESPN Seahawks reporter Brady Henderson will join us to tell us what we need to know about this 17-game schedule and the latest rumors about K.J. Wright and Quentin Dunbar potentially departing from Seattle. Before that, though, Hugh Jackson's feud with the Browns continues. That's next.
Is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacy.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
Where to start? I'm going to go ahead and knock this one out first. Buccaneers head coach Bruce Arians got a tattoo. He got a tattoo, you guys. It is not of his partner wearing a Mark Sanchez jersey. Unfortunately, no. It's actually a tattoo to commemorate Tampa Bay's Super Bowl win. And you know what? Nothing wrong with that. You go, Bruce. You go. I guess, did he tell people he'd get a tattoo and then he actually followed through with it?
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to tell people, you absolutely do have to
follow through with it.
And if I'm Bruce Arians, why the heck not? I mean, look, he's been through his entire career and has had a lot of ups and downs. But, you know, as a head coach, I mean, this is a – you now get to be a part of a category of coaches that you were not even close to – addressing before Tom Brady came into your life. So if I'm Bruce Arians, I'm living it up. I'm enjoying every aspect of it. And if you want to get a tattoo to commemorate that Super Bowl win, yeah, good on you.
Also, this isn't originally in the timeline today, but I forgot, Jake, the winner of the Open the Gates giveaway from our show.
What?
Right here on Jake and Stacy. Yeah. Curtis answered the phone of the eventual winner. It was Ryan.
It was?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
I feel like we won.
This show produces winners.
Look,
that's what we do.
If you want to win,
it's just how we roll.
It's a championship show.
That's right.
You want to get the Open the Gates giveaway? Guess who you call?
That's right.
This show right here. 11 to 1 every day.
Right here.
Yep.
So congratulations, Ryan.
Don't say not 11 to 1.
Yeah, 11
to
2.
11 to 2. 11 to 2.
My bad. My bad.
Gosh. Curtis, get your head in the game.
Dang it.
If I remember correctly, Ryan was the one who his young daughter was really excited to get to baseball and kept asking, like, when's the season going to start? And was really excited about it.
So now she gets...
I'm assuming it's him taking his daughter.
I would hope he takes her.
I know.
Mean, he used her to get in the door.
You used her as a pawn, and you don't even take her to the game?
He's taking his buddy,
like,
Kevin.
Wait, Ryan, what's Kevin doing here? What happened to your child? Ryan's like, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
I don't actually have a kid.
Yeah. my daughter, yeah, she's totally real.
Oh, man. And we're still going to be like, let's go, Ryan.
Yeah.
Taking Stacy.
Whatever
winner.
You got to do. I can't get this out of my head.
Okay.
Though, Stacey. But the question is, Bruce Arians, where did he get this tattoo?
On his, it looks like it's the photo's kind of cropped in a weird way. It looks like it's on his back.
Oh.
Upper back.
That's terrible.
Better than his lower back.
I mean, at least you get a chance to.
It looks
at
like
least
there was some hair shaved in the spot that he got it tattooed.
Really?
Oh, I would imagine they had to take care of a lot.
See, here's the thing.
Get up the weed whacker.
Yeah, take care of a lot.
Unless Bruce Arians is walking around with his shirt off all the time. Like, I'm
not ruling that out, though.
Like, I think that's an awful placement.
What he could do is he could cut a hole in the back of all of his shirts and coats and jackets.
Yeah, this is at the top of his left shoulder. This is a left shoulder deal. That's bad.
Look,
that's
in Tampa.
Bad ball.
He's not gonna be wearing a shirt 53% of
even
the
if
time.
You're a cut off sleeve, you're gonna be like half seeing it. You're like, what is that? That's bad. Like, get it on your arm. Get it on your arm so people know what actually is that you put it there. Like, I don't know. That one bothers me. Go all in, Bruce. Come on. Show it off every day.
Hugh Jackson continues to trash the Browns years after being fired. So this was an interview with ESPN 850. He talked about his tenure with Cleveland, which was incredibly unsuccessful, but talked about just feeling kind of lied to by ownership. So let's start here with cut number 4. This is Jackson explaining where the disconnect was between Cleveland's analytics department and coaching staff.
They were going to be football plus analytics, but they intentionally made it football versus analytics. You got to understand, it wasn't going to be, they wasn't looking for coaches. They were going to take 2 years and they were going to find a way to use this as an experiment to make sure that they could get the data that they needed for it to be better at the expense of whoever. And that's not right. I don't care what nobody says. That's not the way it should be. They also lied to try to paint the picture that I was against analytics. I would have never taken a job if that was the case. Okay, they told you that. They told me that this was going to be a resource to help me win.
Hugh Jackson. Does anybody care about Hugh Jackson? Like, honestly, does anybody care at this point about Hugh Jackson and what he has to say about his failed attempt in Cleveland?
Look, Jake, I watch.
I do
a
not
lot of
care.
Bravo reality TV. I care deeply. I want to hear. I want to hear all the dirty laundry Hugh has to air out.
Look, Hugh Jackson might be right. This might be something that it turned out drastically different than what actually happened. And look, I feel for the guy, but I come on, man. Like, I don't care about it. This is years after the fact, and you're still taking your shots at Cleveland. And I get it. You're bitter. You're angry. You're frustrated that it didn't go better for you, and that you, as Hugh Jackson, you were once a rising star in this industry. You eventually became a head coach for the Cleveland Browns, and now you can't even get a job in the NFL, really, at this point. So I get it, but I don't care about Hugh Jackson.
Now, the interview continues to get kind of wild with Hugh saying he was never told it was going to be a teardown job. He says that he was actually given a contract extension midway through the 2017 season, and he wanted to make it public, but the team refused. So here's cut five.
People have to understand that someone has to determine what is valuable and how valuable that information is. So people need to go back and look at those drafts and see what those players are today. That should tell you all you need to know. They're not on this team. They haven't been. Some of them are not even in the league, but yet we were expected to win. You can't win that way, but yet now I hear other people saying, well, everybody knew it was a teardown. This is what they're going to do. I was never told it was going to be a teardown.
Now, here's the thing. I think that there is probably some of what Hugh Jackson's saying where I don't really get the – he's clearly got, like, it's personal with him in the Browns. But I also think that for an organization to be that dysfunctional for that long, it's not only on Jackson. Like, how many shots at top 10 picks, certainly first round picks, did you have and they never worked out? You can't just say that's coaching.
No, it's not just coaching. I'm not saying it is. I mean, it's highly dysfunctional. But you knew that you were taking one of the most highly dysfunctional jobs in the NFL. How many times, I mean, we've seen so many coaches being chewed up and spit out in Cleveland. But again, you're going out to the world and telling them how bad it is when you have immediately after you left. Freddie Kitchens, for that half of the year, they actually were a good team. They had some success. And look at what Kevin Stefanski has been able to do. A head coach who's coming in who knows exactly who he is and what he's about and is able to convey that message to the team, you can have a great impact on your organization, on your franchise. And Hugh Jackson plays a role in all of this. As well as the rest of the dysfunction that was happening in Cleveland. The text line was getting confused as to why I was yelling about Hugh Jackman and not Hugh Jackson. They were like, why are you yelling about the man who plays Wolverine?
What did he do, Jake?
Hugh Jackson, the former head coach of the Cleveland Browns. Look, this type of stuff happens, and it's unfortunate that it doesn't go the way that you think it's going to go. And I empathize with that. But at the same time, you know, going out and trying to tell the world and convince the world that it was the organization's fault and not you didn't have really a part in it, at this stage in time, I just think it's way past due to just leave it behind and try to move on and learn and grow from the situation.
All right. Brady Henderson of ESPN is going to join us right around the corner to help us understand more about this 17-game schedule. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
This hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by the Pro Club. Well, the NFL is expanding to a 17-game schedule, and KJ Wright reportedly talking with the Cowboys. We've also recently seen Quentin Dunbar potentially making two visits to other teams to help us make sense of all of it. It is ESPN Seahawks reporter Brady Henderson joining us on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. Brady, I'm going to start with the 17-game schedule. So first of all, it's been confirmed that the Seahawks are going to be playing the Steelers. Now, can you tell us anything you know about some of the more minor details. For instance, are we going to see expanded game day rosters? Will the Steelers or the 17th game always be the final game of the season? What should we know so far?
I wish I had a better answer for you than what I'm going to give you, but I don't know. All I knew was that it was going to be the Seahawks at Steelers as the 17th game, and I really can't tell you much more than that. Although I can tell you that that's going to be a pretty good matchup, and Russell Wilson has had two of the better games of his career the last two times the Seahawks have played Pittsburgh. So for whatever that's worth. But, yeah, as far as the details about what that means, I don't know yet.
Now, what has been interesting about this is for the Seahawks, now that they've gone through this process, it has now been something where they had a difficult schedule because of their division. You add on top of it the fact that they were division winners. And, Brady, 2021 looks like it's a pretty difficult schedule, going to be a pretty difficult year for the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, and I always, that was my first thought too, and then I always have to remind myself that, you know, when the schedules come out in April, you know, they tend to look that one way in April, and then they can look a lot different when September and October rolls around, because teams that, you know, you think are going to be contenders, you know, they may not be as good as you thought, and then that works vice versa as well. But, you know, certainly some teams that I think anybody would expect to be in the mix, Green Bay, you know, being one of those teams, Pittsburgh too, coming off, I believe, a 12-4 year last year, winning the division there. So, yeah, so the Pittsburgh game for sure. I mean, at least now it looks like it's going to make that schedule tougher, but you just never know what that's going to look like when the season starts.
There was a report from Sports Illustrated, Mike Fisher, saying that KJ Wright could be in talks with the Dallas Cowboys. Obviously, it's free agency, so a lot of people are in talks with a lot of people. But what could the defense look like without Wright? For instance, who would be hypothetically that starting Sam backer, and what do they miss out if he's gone?
Yeah, I think if they were to go with what they have right now, it would be Cody Barton starting at strong side linebacker. And I think that they view him as a starting caliber player. Now, could they still find what they deem to be an upgrade, somebody with more starting experience? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, KJ Wright's still out there. I would not imagine that the door is completely closed on that, just because, you know, what are we now, 3 weeks into free agency? I cannot imagine that, you know, his price tag would be all that expensive. Certainly not what it seemed like he wanted it to be when he came out and said that he was, you know, not interested in taking any sort of a discount. So I don't think he would be all that expensive at this point, but you've also seen them spend a lot of money. And they do have somebody in Cody Barton there. You know, there's other options. Michael Kendricks, is still unsigned. He's a guy who's played that position for them in the past. And so, but if it's somebody that's currently on the roster, it would definitely be Cody Barton. And I think that they view him as a starting caliber player.
Now, Brady, there's not a whole lot of holes left that you can point to this roster. They've done a good job of adequately, you know, making very direct signings to the holes that they've had left. And cornerback is the other one, and Quentin Dunbar is a name that's been thrown out there as maybe a possible re-sign, and he's confirmed that actually via social media, saying that, hey, the Seahawks, we've been in contact, we've had good conversations. Now he's planning to go out on visits. Is Dunbar a legit prospect to return, or is that just off-season talk?
No, I mean, I'm with you. I heard you on the last segment, and I'm with you. I thought that he made sense as a guy for them to re-sign all along, just because after the, you know, let's call it eventful off-season that he had and then the injury-plagued season, you know, I cannot imagine that his price tag is going to be all that expensive, and that's a guy that, you know, as of 1 year ago, was coming off a very good season and was a guy that the Seahawks deemed worthy of trading a fifth-round pick for. And so I don't know if, you know, the fact that he was injured last season, I don't know if that would, you know, totally make them think so much less of him that they wouldn't still want him. And I think it could make sense because, like I said, I just don't think he's going to have a huge price tag. Now, it does sound like he has some interest from other teams, and that could, you know, work against the Seahawks, but he's a guy that just makes a lot of sense for them. He's their type of corner, has some experience with their style of play. And again, they thought highly enough of him last season to trade for him. And I don't know why. I would think that they would still have a lot of interest. Yeah.
I'm going to jump back to a bit of what kind of Jake was talking about earlier. Are you surprised that the Seahawks haven't yet extended Jamal Adams?
No, I'm not surprised, just because we typically see them when they do extensions like that, it's typically after the draft. Now, Russell Wilson's contract a couple years ago, that was a different story. That was a unique situation. He set the April 15th deadline. But, you know, in terms of extensions for players that are already under contract for at least one more year, they typically wait until after the draft. And I know from checking with somebody in the organization a month or so ago, there was confidence in the building that they were going to get a deal done at some point this offseason. But at the time I checked on that, there was no specific timetable, so they didn't know if that was going to happen before the draft or after the draft. But the fact that it's not happened yet, I don't read anything into that, just because, again, their timetable is to typically make those the last priority.
Now, Brady, you have been kind of hinting at the idea of June 1st, giving us that deadline or that conversation of June 1st maybe being an opportunity for the Seahawks to capitalize on some guys being on the open market. Do you still believe that that could be the case, given the moves that they have made and the limited cap space that they currently still have?
I do, yeah, because I think that there are still ways for them to free up cap space, as I'm sure you both have talked about. I wouldn't be surprised if something has been done with Gabe Jackson's contract. I don't know that for a fact, but I would not be surprised if maybe there's some cap space there. You know, they could still extend players. Again, I think I've made this point before, but I don't think that they would extend a player just to free up cap space. I think that the cap space would be a bonus to something that they would already want to do, even if they weren't up against the cap. But the point is, they could. There's more ways for them to free up cap space. You know, they don't have as many needs right now as I thought they would at this point, just because they've made more signings and they've been able to do that by, you know, doing the void years in their contracts. And so, you know, they don't have as many needs as I thought they would at this point, but I still think that, yeah, I think you're going to see them be active after June 1st. And you typically see players become available after that point, just because it becomes easier for teams to move on from them financially. And I think that's going to be the case, especially this year, just because every team is feeling you know, the pinch of that reduced salary cap. And so I could see them, if they don't do it in the meantime, I could see them signing somebody to compete with Ethan Posick at center, just because I don't think that Posick's contract, $3 million, even though it's all guaranteed, I don't think that locks him into a starting job at center. I think that they could still find somebody to compete with him. They could still find a number three receiver, you know, a strong side linebacker like we already talked about. So, their roster is far from complete. Even with the three draft picks, and I do think you could still see them make some sort of addition after June 1st.
He's one of the best, you guys. Brady Henderson of ESPN. Go follow him for the latest Seahawks updates at Brady Henderson. Read his work at ESPN.com. Thanks so much, Brady.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Brady.
All right, we're going to borrow some of what Brady was talking about, Jake, when we jump into the state of the Seahawks union. We're going to be looking at defense first. That's next.